Today on Maine Calling, Generation Alpha. Move over, Gen Z, and make way for the new gang in town, Generation Alpha. That's right, we're talking about anyone 16 or under. Pretty soon, this will be the largest generation in human history. How do they think? What do they care about? What makes them different from previous generations? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll find out. These young people have grown up with technology and smartphones since they were babies, not to mention political divisiveness. They've endured a pandemic and are worried about the planet. What else matters to them, and how might it shape the future? This show is part of our series, Life Passages. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com.
Support for NPR comes from NPR.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Generation Alpha, those born between 2010 and 2024, are the first generation to be born entirely in the 21st century. They've never known a world without smartphones, and AI is just a part of life. Today, we'll learn more about this youngest generation and how they reflect or shape our rapidly changing world. This show is part of our series, Life Passages, about aging and life stages. Joining me for the hour, Elizabeth, or Lizzie Walker, who is 12 years old and a seventh grader at Ashland District School near Presque Isle. Dylan Burmeister is 19 years old, a rising sophomore at Wellesley College, and is Maine Public's Dow intern this summer. And Dr. Theo Green is Associate Professor of Sociology and Chair of the Sociology Department at Bowdoin College. We invite you to join the conversation. Are you a Gen Alpha kid or teen? Are you the parent or grandparent of one? What do you think are the defining characteristics of this generation? You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for joining us. And Lizzie, I'm going to start with you because you are the member of the panel who is actually in this generation, Generation Alpha. And I'm wondering if this is something that you had heard of before. Is this something you all refer to yourself as, is Generation Alpha?
I've heard of it before. We don't usually refer ourselves to it, but we definitely use the term and it gets thrown around a lot.
Do you feel like you're different than young people who are just a little bit older than you are?
I think a lot of us are different in our own ways, but because of like the stereotypical Gen Alpha, they're all from the same generation. We're all seen as the same people.
So I was reading some statistics, Lizzie, and they said that something like 40% of your generation has held a smart, some sort of tablet before age two. Many kids in your generation have had a phone by the age of eight. What's your experience with technology? Did your parents allow you to have technology early?
Early on when I was toddler stages, I definitely watched TV, but I did not grow up with a tablet. But I do fit right in with the age eight having a phone. I was seven when I got my first.
And what did you use it for? Or what have you been using it for 5 years?
When I originally got it, I had earned it because my parents realized that they wanted to have a way to for me to contact them if I was ever in an emergency. But after that, I used it for watching videos, playing games, talking to my friends, and so on.
And I bet you can't imagine life without it, can you?
Probably not.
Probably not. Okay, before I move on to our other guests, I want to ask you, what do you think other people get wrong about your generation?
I think a lot of people just assume that all of us only see ourselves being like on a phone, watching TV, playing games on a tablet, but we do a lot more than that.
Like what else? What do you like to do?
Well, me, myself, I'm in a dance class here in Presque Isle, Maine. But many kids in our school play many different sports.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Lizzie. I'm going to turn to you, Dylan. You're not Generation Alpha. You're just, you know, you're an old lady at 19 now. But I understand that you and your friends already started noticing a little bit of a difference in your Gen Z generation and Gen Alpha. What did you notice in high school and moving into college?
Well, yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. This is a super interesting topic, in my opinion. So I'm glad to add my feedback. I do want to point out that I think the like generation terms are in some ways fluid. And I think as you get close to like the dividing end of a generation, like there's a lot of fluidity and it's not like, oh, you were born 1 year later, so you are all of these things that Gen Z or that the millennials are and none of the one before, because it's like, it's just not exactly that black and white. But I do think in the, like when I was in high school, and when I was in other community spaces where lots of younger people were, I think you can sometimes see that parts like that younger people are on their phones or iPads a lot more than, you know, some people my age, and especially when they were with other people their own age. And so, for example, like my friends and I, if we were having lunch somewhere, we would usually be talking to each other, or maybe we would be on our phones, but we would be showing each other something, which I'm not saying that's like technology free at all. But then I would look around sometimes and see groups of much younger people, and they would all just be playing a game on their phone, and not really interacting with each other at all. And I do think that's one of the big stereotypes about Gen Alpha, is that they're always on their devices all the time. And like Lizzie was saying, I don't think that's always true for everyone, but I do think that this generation is much more exposed to technology at a much younger age than any generation before it.
I'm going to turn to you, Theo, and ask you about this whole concept of labeling generations, you know, the baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, Gen Z, and now Generation Alpha. Why do generations get defined, and why is it useful?
Yes. One of the reasons I think generations become defined is that usually there is some kind of catalyst or some kind of major event that would often distinguish certain that distinguishes how certain generations might react to certain things and those consequences. So you think about how the baby boomers, for example, that resulted as a post-war sort of phenomenon, right, where we saw this baby boom, right, in terms of increased fertility rates. People were very concerned about what the consequences of these young people would grow up being a significant part of the population. Millennials are kind of are similarly the same thing. They were impacted by, again, this sort of rapid technology and rapid changes. In terms of Generation Alpha, for example, you're talking about young people that have grown up during a time of the global pandemic. And so people are very interested in understanding what will be the consequences of this sort of generation. But I think there's something that Dylan says is also very important to remember too, that there is so much fluidity that now scholars have begun to think about micro generations, generations that kind of are on the cusp between what we may define as one generation and another, where you see people having characteristics that people would ascribe to both of those generations. So for example, Xennials, which is the first micro generation identified, usually identify people that might have characteristics that are aligned with Generation X and those that are aligned with the millennials. I think you're going to definitely see, as we continue to see the generation, I mean, we're still in the middle of Generation Alpha, how as we get moved to beta, which has started last year, apparently, we're going to see again these kinds of sort of overlaps that I think will become more nuanced as we begin to sort of crystallize, Generation Alpha from the other generations.
Yeah, we can't invite somebody from Generation Beta yet. Most of them haven't learned to talk. But anyway, I want to turn back to you, Lizzie, and ask you about the pandemic. I was doing some quick math in my head. You were 6 years old when the pandemic hit, and I'm guessing maybe you didn't do first grade in the classroom, maybe remotely. Tell me what your experience for first, second, third grade was like.
For first and second grade, I was doing at home work, at home lunches, which in my head made it more difficult because I didn't have the actual experience of being taught one on one with an actual teacher in person. But instead, it was all on a computer, which was very new to me at the time because we had never used them before.
Ah, and when you did go back to class in third grade, what was that like?
It was very odd. You could tell that it was harder for kids to get used to being taught in person again because they were so used to, for the past 2 years, being on their computers and just doing their work and then being done with it.
Did you find it hard to make friends and find people when you hadn't been in school with people for 2 years?
It was hard to reconnect with my previous friends, but I wouldn't say it was hard to make new friends because I still saw many of my friends over that amount of time. After I was done my work at home, I would go hang out with some of my friends.
Okay, great. And Dylan, doing math in my head, you were probably in middle school, late middle school, yep, when the pandemic hit. So a little bit different for you as a late Gen Z. You had had the experience of having school and having friends. On the other hand, being 13 is just hard anyway. And yeah, to have the pandemic hit when you're hard, how do you think that affected you and your generation?
Honestly, I think people who were in middle school during the pandemic were actually, I want to say, reasonably lucky in terms of the time that they were affected. I think I have a lot of friends who are slightly older and who were in high school, and I think that was very challenging because high school is such a core experience of being a young person, and you just lose out on all of these memories and opportunities that, like, you can't really make up at any other point. But for me in middle school, you know, it was very challenging academically, especially because I am someone who learns better, like, in person and when I can ask questions more easily than over Zoom. But I was about to be moving to this next stage of, like, going to a new high school and meeting all these new people. And I already had my friends from elementary school. So I think, honestly, like, socially, it was not super challenging for me personally in that time.
And Theo, you've seen these generations now move through college as your students. You've seen first the young people who did college remotely for a while and then came into college having done part of high school remotely. And now Dylan's generation that did part of middle school remotely. Have you noticed a difference in the way that they study, the way that they take in information, the way they relate to you as a professor?
Absolutely. I think, you know, one of the major differences I see between those that, you know, were learning as we approach a pandemic versus those that after was a sense of resilience, I think, in terms of how they react to certain situations and react to different things. You know, before, I think people had to adapt very quickly, but afterwards there was such a fatigue of going through, you know, a couple of years dealing with sort of remote learning and then coming back into an era of, you know, back to analog and reading and you know, more critical kinds of work. Those that came afterwards seem to have a far more sort of open-mindedness and willingness to want to jump back into sort of in-person learning, sort of really deep critical thinking and ways and moving beyond the ways in which we had to calibrate our curricula in order to be able to deal with remote learning. The difference almost is night and day.
It's interesting because I'm thinking these kids don't need to be taught perspective. They come to you, I say kids, these young people, with the perspective of not taking certain things for granted that generations before did.
Oh, completely. I think the feeling of having to take a class in your bed versus being around your friends and being able to connect and have conversations were really essential. I think people, my students really had a difficulty adapting getting back into the classroom because, again, they weren't able to sort of immediately have the kinds of conversations that the students before the pandemic did, which is something I really thrive on in the classroom. They were so used to having typing up answers or being a little bit more shy and reticent. And now the students, I can't shut them up. They're so eager. They're so excited to be back in an environment where they can be able to engage with each other in a very critical way. So again, the kind of remote learning did, I think, have a lot of consequences in terms of development involving interpersonal interactions between the Z generation and the Alpha generation.
Lizzie, would you say that you like being in school? You like being in the classroom?
Yeah, I do really like being able to socialize. And just like Dylan said, I would really prefer being taught in person. So ever since being back in school after the pandemic, everything has been easier. It's been like the best thing.
Do you think that, now I know you're not a doctor and not a psychologist, but Lizzie, do you think having to be isolated and having to be away from people at the same time your brain was developing affected you in any way?
I think it definitely affected the way I see people and meet people because before it was way easier for me to make friends. Now it's more of I can't trust everybody I meet because I don't know them personally and I'm not used to being around people like I used to be.
And what about you, Dylan? Your brain was developing too.
Yeah, I think I don't know, I just think I already had this like established group, and I think middle school is a time where you're going through so much anyway that I was very aware of what was going on in the world around me, but I think I was just kind of grounded in my own like space and my own world and my home. And I think I had already been socialized, you know, I already had to some extent these skills from elementary school and like growing up before the pandemic. So I don't think that like my like brain development of those things was super affected. I will say though, I cannot imagine being a younger student during the pandemic, and I think that would just be so exponentially harder. So yeah.
And Thea, what does the research show us?
I think it bears everything everyone says. You know, the distinguishing characteristic about Generation Alpha is the fact that technology has been so deeply integrated into their lives, right? So you think about the fact that iPads and computers and AI are now in the classroom. They're almost in every facet of their lives. And so going back to Lizzie's point at the beginning of the show, you see now this kind of backlash where younger people are now trying to find ways of connecting by doing activities outside, by getting physical toys, as opposed to thinking about relying on games and technology and social media all the time, because they're trying to fight this sense of isolation that comes from the fact that technology has become such a pervasive element of their lived experience, being at a very young age, at a very a critical stage of their development.
We do need to take a quick break. We're talking about Generation Alpha. What do you want to ask or what do you want to say about what you've noticed about the difference in generations, if there is one? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Generation Alpha, babies up to 16 years old, technically 2 to 16 years old. These are young people who grew up with digital everything, and the pandemic was a significant part of their childhood. What are they like? What challenges do they face? How will they shape our future? It will be the largest generation in human history. My guest for this hour, Theo Green with Bowdoin College, where he is department chair and associate professor of sociology. Lizzie Walker is a seventh grade student actually almost done with seventh grade at Ashland District School. And Dylan Burmeister is a Wellesley College student and current Dow intern at Maine Public. She is a graduate of Lincoln Academy. We invite you to join the conversation. What do you notice about Gen Alphas in your life? Send us a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now, Kara Merrill. She is an English teacher at Ashland High School. She teaches middle and high school grades and is Lizzie's teacher. Thanks so much, Mrs. Merrill, Kara, for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
I understand you've been teaching for decades. Has it been mainly middle school age kids?
I've taught middle school and high school, mainly middle school. I've been in Ashland for a number of years. I also taught at Mount View in Thorndike for a number of years. So I've got quite a wealth of knowledge of middle school and high school students in 35 almost years in education.
Okay, so you've seen Gen X, Millennials, Gen Z, and now Gen Alpha. What do you think is noticeably different about the Gen Alpha students, at least when they're in the ages that you have them?
Hearing all that makes me feel like I've been around a long time, which I guess I have.
I hear you.
When I think of Gen Alpha, I mean, one of the things that comes to mind is that, you know, these students are very informed of just about everything. They have answers at their fingertips. Back in the day, several generations ago, several decades ago, maybe people would have to go to the old card catalogs to find out information, go to the library. And now all we have to do is flick a few key buttons and we have answers at our fingertips. And, you know, I find that Gen Alpha is definitely, you know, informed because they also are highly involved in social media, which I think a lot of people think of as a negative thing. However, you know, there's a lot of good out there because these kids are informed. They know the things that are happening in the news. They know the things that are the latest trends also, like 6-7, that might drive me crazy. But, you know, overall, they are much more aware culturally, socially, than I think previous generations were. And a lot of that is social media, you know, it is technology. But I also think that they're also more accepting of a lot of people as well, because, you know, I take, for example, Ashland, we're a very undiversified population up here. You know, our kiddos are able to be more involved with different things through social media and other means that expose them to different cultures and to different ways of life that they would not see otherwise.
That's a really interesting and important observation. So these kids are, even in their most rural parts of the world, more informed and more exposed to people who are different than they are.
I agree with that. And, you know, as I said before, social media, technology, the internet, they all have at times negative connotations. But really, in reality, there's good out there, too. So, I mean, it can be a difference. It can be a game changer. Put students who are not exposed to as much on a different level, you know, with people, for example, who might be from bigger cities. I mean, we can do, you know, virtual tours, things like that. But, you know, it also gives kids a chance to meet other people. We'll go to workshops or things like that. And like Lizzie's NFFA. They meet kids from other schools, they can, you know, join them on social media and get to know them even better. So I think it's a good platform in a lot of ways.
And so it keeps, interesting. Like, I'm thinking about when I was her age, I had a pen pal that I, you know, I got through a TV show. I think it might have been a Zoom on public TV. Theo, I'm wondering, before we let Mrs. Merrill, before we let Kara Merrill go, as a professor, as a researcher, is there anything you want to ask her?
I am kind of curious. Some of the studies are also bearing, as an English teacher, you would know this, that one of the consequences around all this technology has to do with literacy skills and the decline of literacy skills with Generation Alpha. What have you observed in terms of trends and patterns, in terms of how students are retaining information, their literacy skills, et cetera?
Honestly, I do feel that since COVID, we have really jumped on the technology bandwagon a lot. And I feel as though the old pencil and paper techniques have kind of given way. So in some ways, those are a crutch. But on the other side, I feel that the engagement is, depending upon the day, higher or lower. I feel as though the students that are using technology are doing so for a decent purpose. AI is a battle that is a problem as well. And I feel as though, our students do rely on the technology, but to what extent, I guess it depends on the class as well. And I'm not sure if I quite answered your question, but
Thank you.
yeah. So we've been focusing on what's different. What's not different, Mrs. Merrill, Kara? What has not changed? I mean, how is a 12 or a 13-year-old the same as a 12 or 13-year-old in previous generations?
I think one of the things is that these students have goals and they have things that they want to achieve. And those goals and those achievements, the sky is the limit because there are so many things available, jobs that are available that would have never been available even 5 or 10 years ago. And the motivation is there. Times there's lack of engagement, there's some empathy out there. You'll hear people say, kids these days. But overall, I think the wanting to do well and wanting to do well in the future, I think our students want to be good civic members of society. And I think that overall, they are the same in that they want to learn, they want to excel, they want to please, and they want to do great things.
And I want to ask you about something that I'll also ask Lizzie about when she comes back on, Kara, and that is Maine's new ban on cell phones during school hours. Do you think it's a good idea?
Truthfully, Ashland School, where I teach and where Lizzie is a student, we have had a ban on cell phones for 2 years now. We have had a no cell phone policy from the beginning of the day to the end of the school day, and we have had very little flack and very little issues with it. And it has made a huge marked difference in the concentration and focus on students that students have. It has done wonders for things like people being students being distracted. And honestly, I think it's a really, really good thing because they have other tools, and phones end up typically just being a distraction versus a help. So to me, I think it's a very good law.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. That's Kara Merrill. She's an English teacher at Ashland District School. Dylan, I want to ask you as well about the cell phone ban because it strikes me that in a way, younger people might have an advantage. Your generation was sort of the beta tester, that you didn't have rules around cell phones. You and your parents and everyone else was learning about their impact in real time and seeing how they sort of take over our attention span. So I'm kind of wondering if you feel as though you at age 19 were kind of in an unfortunate pocket of developing our familiarity and our knowledge about technology.
Yeah, so I think if you look at the people slightly older than me as well, maybe some young millennials and all through Gen Z, I think we grew up when social media was really being pioneered and we were just kind of experiencing it, as you said, for the first time. And I think we're still seeing some of how social media, what the long-lasting effects of it are. Like, one thing that jumps out to me is we know, things on social media can often be pulled back from the past and it's hard to really like erase things, I guess you could say. And I think when social media was first developed, people didn't really know in the same way that we know now that that can happen and that it can always kind of haunt you what you put online. And I also want to say that I think the short form content we're seeing now that's really everywhere, I just think that's very harmful. And I think that is one of the things that stands out to me about young people and what's hard about technology is, I mean, it's explicitly designed to lower our attention spans, and that's something that, like, in no way can be useful in the classroom. And so I think you can see with people who have grown up with technology, like, the younger half of Gen Z and Gen Alpha has, it's like it is harder, I think, for a lot of us to focus because we've been fed this technology somewhat subconsciously that's just in our face all the time, and it's just kind of there doing that.
Theo, you're nodding.
Oh yes. I kept thinking about not just the attention span, but also the question of the tactility of opening a book. I've seen such a difference over the past couple of years where students are now moving away again from using the technology and trying to go and open a physical book and read a physical book again. I think there is an effort and a desire for students to actually have this kind of curiosity, and there's lots of different ways in which to express it, to the point that I kind of have to also stay on top of the technology as well. I think educators have this culture lag that they're dealing with because students are, three steps ahead. And so how, and so I've so It has been a challenge, but I'm also really encouraged by the different and creative ways in which, young people are using technology. They're trying to go back to more traditional techniques of education in terms of reading, even writing cursive these days, which is now making a comeback because studies are now showing that teaching students cursive can help, with critical thinking and engaging their brains again. So I think there is a kind of a little bit of a backlash amongst this generation and want to get back to some traditional ways of learning, which has been encouraging.
Lizzie, did you have to learn cursive? Do you know what it is?
Yes. I learned cursive my fifth grade year. We used to have packets like this thick, and you would have to finish them by the end of the week, and it was all cursive handwriting.
Welcome to my world, or my former world. We'll go to Susan, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Susan, go ahead.
Hi there. I'm a millennial, and I have children who are in their early 30s, and I have grandchildren, one who is about to turn 5, and so that makes her part of this alpha generation. And she and her mother live with me, so I'm getting to watch this growing period very closely. And what I've noticed, which hasn't been brought up yet, is that the wisdom as well as digital literacy of her mother is invaluable in terms of knowing what's real and what's not real and helping to guide this little one to have a balance in her life and not be sucked in by screens, which is so easy to do, really limiting and monitoring any little bit of, watching some interesting bit online, but also having all the balance of music and movement and outdoor and socialization, everything. This is important, and I think that on the other side of this is that the parents of this generation, if they are discerning, can use media to really be better parents. I see that my daughter knows so much more about being a good mother than I ever did. And it's because she has access to and is able with good critical thinking skills to know what's real and not, but access to good information about how to help children grow and regulate themselves, how to regulate herself as a parent. I think all of this is absolutely invaluable in
Yeah,
terms of making.
Susan. Yeah, thank you so much. Those are really great insights, and I can relate thinking about if I knew then what I know now as a parent. And I want to turn back to you, Lizzie, and ask about your own parents. I'm guessing that they talk about technology and they are engaged in technology, and it's not just something they're handing you and saying, no rules, no thoughts, but. I don't want to put words in your mouth. What kind of conversations do you have with your parents about technology?
Well, just last year, I was allowed to have a social media account on TikTok because I finally had a conversation with my parents where we could talk about the ups and downs of it. And now that I have it, I realized that my desperate wanting of it was not something that I should have been begging my parents of because it's not worth the hype that people bring forward of it.
That's a really great lesson. A lesson applies to a lot of things in life. You're going to find you want something. And then when you get it, you think, well, why did I want that so bad? Susan, thank you so much for calling. We'll go down to Socko and Bob. Hi, Bob. Go ahead.
Yes, I'd like to ask the Alpha generation a question. I was bullied as a child, and I have two teenage daughters, and my oldest one was bullied. And in this digital age where I used to be able to get off the bus and the bullying would stop while I was home, now bullies can reach you right in your bedroom 24/7. And I was wondering how the Alpha generation is dealing with that, and do they have any advice to other kids their age that may be dealing with that?
Bob, I'm so sorry to hear about yourself and your teenagers' experience. Lizzie, do you know kids who've been bullied, and do you worry about that?
There are many kids, especially in the middle school and high school, that have been bullied, especially over the internet. There's specifically one girl, and you can tell she still struggles with it. And every day I see her, I try to ask her if she's okay, because you can tell just by the look in her eyes she has not been doing good because of the things that have been said and done to her over the internet.
Yeah, I think your teacher, Kara, is still there with you. I want to ask Kara, do you feel as though schools and administrators are equipped to deal with this new world of cyberbullying?
I think it's a very difficult thing to monitor. Our school does its best to try to take care of bullying issues, to combat bullying issues, and to be proactive about them. But the problem is, back to what was said earlier, that, you know, when you get off the bus and you go home as a student, you know, you're no longer just, you know, dealing with bullying issues at school. You've got it on your social media. It's coming in your email. You're getting a text. And it's very hard, I think, for administrators to combat things that are happening outside school as well. But often what happens outside school is brought into school. So, you know, it becomes an issue here as well. And that's when teachers like myself, our administrators, do our very best to try to help. But it's not it's in so many facets of life that it's very difficult to keep track of, monitor, and to stop, unfortunately.
Dylan.
Yeah, I think one thing I've noticed regarding this, and I completely agree with what was just said about like it being in school versus out of school, and that's really hard to like discern which is which, especially if you're looking at like legally what a school can or cannot prosecute and enforce. But one thing I've noticed is that it's so much easier for people to say really hurtful things online because there's no accountability in a sense, and you don't have to own up to the words that you're saying. It's not like you're saying them to someone's face. And so a lot of people find it easier to just say whatever they want, and they can think it's a joke or something, you know, that maybe isn't actually as hurtful as it would sound if you said it to someone. But then if you think about those words really, you know, in someone's face, it's incredibly hurtful. And I think that a lot of people, that we're seeing an increase in some of these behaviors because people can do it online and they really don't have to own up to what they're saying at all.
Professor Green, what's the impact of this?
I think one of the things that you're thinking, one of the things we are concerned about is the impact of mental health on our young people. And again, I think I definitely see the impact of it in terms of college students, that, again, you see the rise of things like suicidal ideation, you see the rise of things like depression and other kinds of mental health issues that impacting the younger generations, particularly Generation Z and Generation Alpha. I think the encouraging thing about that, though, is that we are now beginning to have those conversations because, again, a lot of these things happen in isolation. And so the fact that now younger people are having the courage to come forward to sort of talk about these experiences of bullying, talk about the kinds of feelings around that, are giving us the ability to have the tools to be able to combat that. So I think it's still a very unfortunate thing that it's kind of worsened, but it is forcing important conversations that parents and teachers and professors and other adults are having with this generation.
We're talking about Generation Alpha. These are young people ages 2 to 16. What are your thoughts? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're learning about what sets Generation Alpha apart. What matters to these kids, preteens and teens? With me, Dylan Burmeister, who is a college student studying history and political science, and she is Maine Public's intern this summer. Lizzie Walker is a Generation Alpha member. She's a middle school student in Ashland, which is in Aroostook County. And Theo Green is the Bowdoin Sociology Department Chair and a professor there. Share your comments and questions. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org. Be quick if you send an email, talk@mainepublic.org, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. A few things we haven't gotten to yet that I really want to get to is the the influence of the influencers, if you will. You know, this is a brave new world. When I grew up, there was no such thing as an influencer. There were celebrities, and they were written about in magazines that came in the mail once a month. But there were not people on social media coming into my home and sharing every little detail of their daily life. And Dr. Green, Theo, I'm going to start with you. How does that change the world?
I think in good ways and in a lot of bad ways. I think one of the things about influencers that I find interesting, particularly with Generation Alpha, is the fact that you have Generation Alpha influencers. You have young people that can show skills and show other kinds of ideas. I've learned cooking from, you know, these young kids, right? I think it's such a really interesting kind of platform for people to have. I think there's a lot of downsides to it as well in terms of, again, the way in which I think we're performing a certain kind of persona that might not be authentic, that might not be necessarily real. But the fact that it has become so democratized has been a really interesting phenomenon that I think I'm still trying to wrap my head around.
Lizzie, are there influencers that you follow?
Yes, specifically one. Her name's Serena Neal. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she's one of my favorites. And she 100% influences many people from a wide age range, from ages like 9 to 80.
How old is Serena? Do you know?
I think she's around 23 or 24.
Okay. Okay. So somebody a little older than you. And what makes her special? Because there are lots of influencers out there. Why do you think she has such a following?
She has a very exotic, brave energy to her. And she is very good at teaching skills, but also making it fun. And she shares things in her life, like she'll set out a basket of goodies for her delivery driver, and she'll make a Lego set and then post it.
Yeah, so positive energy. Dylan, you know I've got to ask you, is there an influencer you follow or more than one?
I would say not really. That's kind of less of my thing. I will say, like, I don't know, I do cross country and track in college, and so sometimes we'll talk about like running influencers, which do exist, and I do think it's interesting that we're at a point where there's like specialized influencers in a way, and so like within different industries or like activities, like you have these people who are focused on different things, and like they're really marketing this specific lifestyle or activity, whatever it is, and I think that's really interesting because it is kind of proof that influencing is like an entrenched career now, which I also think it's fascinating that there are studies showing like, or interviewing young kids and like, oh, what do you want to do when you grow up? And that being an influencer is actually like a top one in certain studies, which I just find fascinating.
We'll go to Leslie calling from Montville. Hi, Leslie, go ahead.
Hi. I wondered if there was something else besides technology that's kind of overwhelming kids today. For example, I mentioned to my granddaughter about the incarceration of Japanese citizens in World War II. And she said, oh, yeah, because I only learned about it as a freshman in college. And she said, oh, we covered that in seventh grade. And her parents also have mentioned things they learned in high school that, you know, and she'd say, oh, yeah, we already did that, you know, in seventh or eighth grade. And I'm wondering if the schools and textbooks and so forth are already incorporating so much information that, you know, it's like it's overwhelming for kids, or maybe it's just appropriate, but if that has any difference in how they are looking at things.
Well, let me ask Lizzie, because her teacher did talk about how much more information is at the fingertips of young people and how much more they know. Lizzie, do you see knowing all this stuff is good, or do you feel overwhelmed?
I would say a little bit of both, but more of it's very good that we get to learn it so early on. For example, our class just took a trip to the Holocaust and Human Rights Center in Augusta. And before, when we were working on projects that were going to be displayed there, it didn't seem real, but once it happened, it felt right. It felt like it was meant to be.
Wow. Well, there you go, Leslie. There's your answer. We just have a couple minutes left, but... So I'm going to put a big thing on you, Dr. Green. What does this all mean for the future? What is this? A bit of a prognosticator here, making you a bit of a prognosticator here. But how will Generation Alpha, what do we know at this point? What do we think at this point about how they will shape the future?
So one of the things that I wanted to highlight is the fact that Generation Alpha are also the children of the millennial generation, right? So again, you see people that have dealt with a lot of change and a lot of adaptation. I have a very strong feeling that as we continue to see our world becoming more advanced, we're going to see an enormous amount of adaptation. We're going to see a lot of, I think this is going to be a very resilient generation that will deal with everything that is thrown at them. And again, I think the technology and the knowledge that is at their disposal gives them permission sometimes to go around things, because again, they're raised with the values of the millennials. They're bold. They do have a social justice orientation. I actually have a very sort of hopeful vision of Generation Alpha, because it's going to be a large generation like the boomers. And they're going to, I think, be able to hopefully pick up the mantle and in some ways fight for a much better world. I know that sounds really sunshiny, but I think given what I've seen, there's just so much hope that comes out of this young generation of kids that I'm very excited about.
Lizzie, what do you think as a member of Gen Alpha of Dr. Green's optimism and hope for your generation?
I think that is definitely a great thing. I hear many people say that they think, for example, there's many people who go around saying, these kids are going to solve world hunger, they're going to solve climate change, they're going to create new things, create cures for different sicknesses. And I think that is great, and that is such positive behavior. But at the same time, we're only just getting started. We don't know who we are yet. And so all of those things being said, I think that however you decide to go in this generation, like what path you decide to go down, that's where you're going to go. And whether that is solving world hunger or just being a doctor or
just maybe being a doctor,
being an interior designer or any of those things that I've heard many people say that they really want to be and really want to do.
Wonderful. And I just have to mention an article that I read yesterday about three 16-year-olds from India who have won the Earth Prize for being able to finding a stick that takes microplastics from drinking water. So I got to ask you, Lizzie, what do you want to be when you grow up? Do you know yet?
I really want to be a realtor.
Okay. And what about you, Dylan?
I don't know yet.
And what about you, Dr. Green?
I think I'm doing it.
Wonderful. Are you doing what you thought you'd be doing when you were 13?
Actually, yes. I always wanted to be a teacher. I wanted to be a professor. So I thought I was going to be a history professor, and now I'm doing sociology. So okay. Maybe that's...
Well, this was just so enjoyable. Thank you all so much. That's Dr. Theo Green, Associate Professor and Chair of Sociology at Bowdoin College, Lizzie Walker, a seventh grade student at Ashland District School, and Dylan Burmeister, a rising sophomore at Wellesley College and Maine Public's Dow intern. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to re-air our previous show about how some efforts to protect bird species are indeed succeeding. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.